Greetings, fellow traveler. As humanity awakens and evolves, we see change in every aspect of our lives. Let's consciously manifest our desires. I am Candace Craw Goldman, and this is New Earth Journey.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. It's Tuesday, July 21st, 2015. My late teacher, Dolores Cannon, said, "We are living in the most important time in the history of the world." I've become a believer in that statement. Humans are awakening. They're claiming their divinity. They're reclaiming their own individual power. But what does that really mean? There's so much to talk about. It means that we, as humans, are waking up to who we really are. And this fact is a game changer. It will change everything about life on this planet. How is this happening? Meaning, what are the nuts and bolts of this? The biology, the perception. Is our physical DNA really changing? I wonder these things all the time. I think about them. I read about them. I study them. Maybe you do too. Are we really ascending? What does that even mean? What will or does that look like? What will or does that feel like? How will we know? Each and every part of our world is changing quickly and sometimes drastically. Tonight's show will be one of introduction and setting the stage. I have no guest this evening, and it is my plan after tonight to always have another human being here to engage with in conversation and idea exchange. It is my goal to bring people to this radio program to talk about these concepts, but not only these big esoteric metaphysical, spiritual ideas. I want to bring a variety of interesting people on this show to talk about their lives and their discoveries in all aspects of life so that we can share those and grow and be happier and more fulfilled as humans. I want to talk about time travel and out-of-body experiences and manifesting objects. But I also want to talk about clean water and art and how to grow a really good tomato. I want to discuss changing DNA, quantum physics, and consciousness expansion and energy medicine. But I really want to know more about homeschooling and vaccinations and smart meters and drones. I grew up in the 60s and 70s. I thought Johnny Carson and then after him, David Letterman, had the best jobs imaginable. And then one extremely late night, while waiting for my high school daughter's band bus to arrive at the school, sitting in the parking lot with the radio on, I just happened to hear Art Bell on Coast to Coast Live on the truck radio. I think my world changed right then and there. He was talking about, I believe, after-death communication and actually playing radio clips, audio clips of after-death communication. I don't think that my dropped jaw lifted for hours after that. It was astounding to me that someone was talking about these fascinating subjects on the radio. Of course, times have changed, and now, in 2015, there are a plethora of these shows. And here I am, adding to all of those voices across all of these airwaves. So why? Why am I here adding my voice to a long list of others exploring similar topics, maybe in a little better way or more experienced way? Well, I have several answers to that question. But the most important answer is, I believe that it must be the case that the more that any of us talk about empowerment or the betterment of life for everyone, the more possible it becomes and the better it is for all of us. I've always been about sharing. The more we talk about creativity and freedom and expansion for everyone, the better. So that's why I'm here. And a part of this answer is because where I live physically. My husband, Tom, and I live on a small farm in rural Kansas. Now, Kansas is not a place one typically thinks about when one considers cutting-edge metaphysics or new spiritual thought. But people are waking up here too. It is happening here, just like it's happening everywhere. People are waking up here, and it's one of my goals for this show to look to my local community for connection in this way, because I have this conversation over and over again with native Kansans or with other people who come here to visit. So there are lots of stories to tell, even about Kansans and things that happen here. For example, the first Saturday in August, my wellness studio in Augusta, Kansas, we're going to have a meeting focused entirely on UFOs, presented by a Wichita native named Bill Spicer. Bill not only has taken amazing photos of craft right here in the Wichita area, but he's had communication with these beings. Now, none of that is headline news in the metaphysical community. You know that. But here's what's nice. What's nice about this fact is I feel absolutely free to tell everyone here in this state that I know, my friends and family and my contacts, about this meeting. And I will also be supported by the local Chamber of Commerce when I put a sign on my studio door in tiny, conservative, Bible Belt, Augusta, Kansas. Augusta has a population of less than 10,000 people. Kansas is one of those places that those on the coast consider a flyover state. I know they make jokes about us. And sometimes we make jokes about ourselves. And sometimes we even say, that's just fine. You keep those folks out of here because we like our rural life. This state isn't normally one worth traveling to for any real reason. We're not a destination state, to be sure. So, why live here in Kansas? In my own story, my own short answer to that question is that my elderly parents still live here. And I'm the only surviving child. And we have a very small family. And I want to be close to them. There was a time a few years back when my husband and I thought we might consider moving to Arkansas. I was traveling there quite a bit to assist Dolores Cannon, my teacher, in her classes, and Northwest Arkansas would have been about midpoint between my parents' home in Wichita and the home of my lovely in-laws in St. Louis. And I want to say hi to my mother-in-law, Linda, one of my best supporters. Hi, Linda. thank you for listening. Anyway, we thought that that might just be perfect. We might live in Northwest Arkansas. And literally while we were looking at land, my mom fell, broke her pelvis, just as we were seriously considering the idea, and I quickly realized that I needed to be much closer to her than a several-hour drive. I needed to be able to sit with her in the hospital. So we started to look at properties here. And that brings me to one of my first stories. So while we were looking at properties here, there was a time when I was with the real estate agent. And we were in his pickup truck, and we were circling a hayfield behind the small farmhouse here on the property. And I had him stop, and I said, "You know, you might think this is a little strange, but I want to walk right out into the middle of that hayfield there, and I want to lay down on the ground, and I want to ask God if this is the right place for us to live." And he was very kind, and I'm not sure he'd ever heard such a request before, but I opened the door, and I walked out into the middle of the field. Now, this was near my brother's birthday. And my brother's birthday is the 5th of March. I think it was just afterwards, maybe the 8th or something like that. So it was a cool early March day in Kansas. It was sunny, but it was damp. The ground was damp. The sky was blue. There were beautiful puffy white clouds floating by. It was a little breezy. And I lay down in the middle of that field. And I flat asked God or whoever, the universe, my angels, my higher self, to give me a sign to tell me whether or not this was the right place for us to live. So I laid there and I thought, well, what kind of sign is it going to be? I thought maybe a bird might circle over my head. I thought a butterfly might show up and land on my nose. I don't know what the sign was, but I waited. And I waited patiently. But I also knew the realtor was waiting just, you know, right over there in the running pickup truck. And I wasn't going to wait forever. So I thought to myself, well, you know, it feels comfortable here. My back feels comfortable here on the ground. I think this is going to be okay. And right when I had that thought, I thought, I don't need to wait for another answer. That's good enough for me. That feeling is good enough for me. So I put my hands on the ground, still damp and chilly. I had a coat on and boots. And I started to sit up. And that's when I noticed it. Right at the tip of my right boot was a blooming sunflower. Now, anyone from this area knows that there is no such a thing as a blooming sunflower in Kansas in the first week in March. Or April or May or even June. Sunflowers bloom around here in July when it's hot. They don't even push up out of the ground until summer. But there it was, right at my boot. A blooming sunflower coming out of the ground. And it wasn't there when I laid down. So from that moment on, I knew that this was the correct place for us to be. And so that brings me to talking a bit about me and my background. And as Dolores would say, well, it's always good to begin at the beginning. So I'll tell you a bit about myself and my family and how I got into this work. I was born in 1961 to a young Air Force fighter pilot and his German-born wife in New Mexico. My mom went through World War II as a motherless teenager. She lost her mom at the tender age of 4, and then she also lost her father to the war. She has some incredible stories of being not only brave, but street smart, surviving by her wits, enduring hunger and hardship, and saving her family. Before escaping to the American front, she eventually came to America with stars and hope in her eyes, and is still at 88, one very proud American citizen. Albeit still very sillily ashamed of her accent, which everyone else thinks is cute. From my mother, I learned my enduring love of companion animals and also how to be a good mother myself. My dad was a highly decorated and respected Vietnam War vet whose fighter plane was shot out of the sky in 1967 when I was just 6 years old. Talk about stories. There are actually several people out there, one who just recently contacted me, who are making movies about where my dad is a significant character in them, telling the story about the war. And my dad was quite a character. He still is. From my dad, I learned that possibly the most important life skill that one can have is to be resourceful. He has always been incredibly resourceful. And he's always beaten the odds when the situation looked grim or hopeless. He used to say, if the odds are 10,000 to 1, that's about right. You can still come out a winner. He always had, and he gave me the absolute knowing that I could be that too. And I also learned something very, very important about healing in the body from my dad. About after the incredible time where he was shot down from his fighter jet in the war. When he landed on the ground in North Vietnam, he had such a bad compound fracture that the bones were sticking out of his leg. First things first, he kept the enemy at the time at bay and was successfully rescued where many of his friends were not and spent years in North Vietnam prisons. A terrific story there, to be sure. But the one that I think about and talk about often in my own healing practice as it concerns my dad is what happened after he got to the hospital and then sent back to the States. You see, his leg got infected and the doctors wanted to take his leg. They wanted to cut it off. It was terribly infected with gangrene, and they said it must be amputated to survive. And he told them to go to hell. Not only would he survive, he would heal and go back to the war to help his buddies that were left. My mother pleaded for him to listen to the doctors and agree to the amputation so that she would have a husband, so that his children would have a father. But my dad refused. They actually brought him a piece of paper and said, you can have your leg cut off and you can sign this piece of paper and you don't ever have to go back to the war. He looked at that piece of paper and he tore it up and he threw it in the face of the man that delivered it to him. He would not leave his buddies. My dad was very brave. So they didn't amputate. He wouldn't let them. He was convinced he would heal and keep both legs and walk again. And that's exactly what happened. He was up and walking months before any doctors said he possibly could be. And he did, in fact, return to see combat. So from my dad, I learned that his absolute belief in the power of his mind to heal his body worked for him. When everyone else said it wasn't possible, he said, I'm not listening to you. I'm following my inside messages, what my internal self says. And he healed himself. So Dad came home to me and Mom and my younger brother, Randy, who was 18 months younger to me. Randy was my only sibling, and he was a huge influence in my spiritual growth. Not only were we best friends and playmates growing up, we had multiple supernormal and paranormal things happen to just the two of us at the same time in our childhood. And I want to tell one of those stories right now. I think I was about 5 and Randy was about 3, and we were playing in his room, and we were playing with the chalkboard, and we were playing with a rocking chair, and we were rocking on the arms of the chair. I think we were on horses, stagecoach, and the bad guys were on the chalkboard, and we were just having so much fun. And all of a sudden, we heard something, and we stopped. We stopped what we were doing, and we got off the chair and we walked over to the door of his room and we looked down the hallway, which seemed like a million miles away at the time, but it's just a few feet, to the open door of my bedroom. And we heard something, and around the corner came two giant white cats. They were like tiger cats, huge, walking slowly. And they walked shoulder to shoulder around the doorway and around, down through the hall towards us. And Randy and I just were stunned. And we didn't move. And we didn't say anything. And the cats walked towards us. And when the cats came close to us, in tandem, their heads turned. And their eyes met our eyes as we held our breath. The cats then turned their heads back forward and slowly walked down the hallway into the kitchen. And then they disappeared. Now, Randy and I had a few other stories like that, and we knew we weren't going to be able to tell Mom and Dad about them because Mom and Dad would say, "Oh, you're just making that up," or "That's just a story." So we didn't tell them. We didn't tell them that. And we didn't tell them a lot of other things either. My younger brother, Randy, was also the very first person I ever knew who actually woke up. He woke up as an adult in about 1987 or 88. He was one of the most kindest, most generous people you would ever want to meet. He would go out of his way to help strangers. Somebody had a flat tire or had run out of gas on the side of the road, my brother would stop to help. That's the kind of guy he was. He was very much loved. And he was the very first person I ever knew who noticed the 1111 number repetition phenomena. Now, he noticed this back when the whole idea of digital clocks was pretty much fairly new. And I had no idea what he was talking about. He kept saying, "Look at that. It's always 1111. Why do you think that is?" Well, I know now why it was. He was awake. So my dear brother Randy was killed by a reckless teenage driver in 1989, just weeks after we went on a ski vacation together, just days after he told me, "You know, sis, you never have to worry about me disappearing when Mom and Dad get old. I'm going to be there to help you take care of them." One of the interesting notes about my brother's death was he was so generous that a few months before his death, he took out a small life insurance policy on himself and made my parents the beneficiaries. Now, it made absolutely no sense for a young and healthy single 26-year-old man with hardly any income to do this, and he really could not afford it, but he did it anyway. You know why? Because he wanted to help his friend out. His friend was new in the insurance business. The death of my brother changed my world. Everything was different after that. My psychic abilities blossomed even while my grief held on. But life continued on. And so did the occasional spiritual experience. So move ahead a couple of decades or so, and Tom and I and our school-aged children are living in the Austin, Texas area. And it was during this time that I had a quite profound spiritual experience that would completely change the course of my life. At the time, I was working as an artist and photographer for a few years, primarily doing camera work and shooting at the yearly Austin Rodeo, doing portraits or sometimes album covers for country and western singers, big and small, sometimes portrait work. I didn't have to work hard. Tom did a very good job providing for his family, but I liked being creative. And as it happens, I was working on at the time, it was my biggest shoot of my career. It was to produce the album cover art for the third album I'd already done, too, of an Americana country artist. His name was Matthew. And we'd been working on this shoot for many months. We had a location, lighting, a special antique truck he wanted to take a picture of with him near it, a crew, and a small window of time to create enough images for the album and the promotion of it. Now, Matthew still had a day job. You know, he wasn't giving that up yet till he made it in the music world, and he had travel and then music gigs lined up. And so timing was everything. And I woke up the day after all those months of planning in excruciating pain. Now, I'd been experiencing chronic body pain and other multiple debilitating, although non-life-threatening, health issues for many years, including two bedridden pregnancies, 7 weeks for our first child, and 5.5 months I spent in bed to deliver a second healthy baby. So I'd had some struggles. So the pain was back, and it wasn't long before I had to make the call to cancel the shoot with Matthew. I had to call him and all the crew, cancel the location, the lights, the truck, everything. I put myself in bed. I couldn't move anyway. So as I lay there, I felt awful. I felt so awful. I had let so many people down. I felt very much like a loser. Imagine me putting the big L on my forehead. But I also felt in a way like it was the last straw. I was just so upset. I had hit the bottom. This was sort of the dark night of the soul. I found myself deciding to pray. I was going to pray myself into a stupor, I thought. I prayed to God. I prayed to Jesus. I prayed to every angel and saint whom I could even remember the name of. I tried to memorize the rosary that night. I prayed to Buddha. I called out to my guardian angel. I asked my deceased relatives to assist, especially my brother. But what I found myself praying, I found was a different prayer than any other that I had ever uttered before. Rather than, please release me, or take away my pain or trouble, this time I prayed something new. This time I prayed, what am I supposed to do? What do I need to change? I've tried every drug, every doctor, every treatment imaginable. What is left to do? I cannot go on living like this. What am I supposed to do? Now, my official diagnosis was fibromyalgia, but that's a wastebasket diagnosis. And it just meant that lots of stuff was wrong, lots of stuff hurt, lots of stuff kept me from having a real life. But it kept me from that project that day, and it put me in bed that day. And I just decided to do something different. I just had it in my mind like a pit bull. I had it in my teeth. I was just going to pray myself into a trance. And I did. I prayed for several hours straight until I found myself transported. I left my body. I found myself in a beautiful field that looked very much like the pasture that was behind our house at the time, but it was more beautiful. It was greener. It was more ethereal. It had more light. And there in front of me were five beings in a semicircle. And they were made purely of bright white light. I just stood there, amazed at what was in front of me. The middle being, after a time, stood up, and with his light arm, handed out a piece of paper, literally a piece of paper, then was dangling kind of underneath my nose. It was a sheet of paper. And I took my arm and I took the sheet of paper and I looked at it, and there was instructions. There was instructions on this sheet of paper. And so I read them, and here were the instructions. Number one, go to your doctor and tell him that you are tired. Now I have to stop there and say I wasn't tired at all. And I had just seen my doctor, and we had both pretty much agreed there wasn't anything else he could do for me. And we decided kind of to break up. So there was that. Go to your doctor. Tell him you're tired. Number two, volunteer for Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep. Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep was an organization that I had heard of. I knew about it. I thought it was amazing. But I didn't think I could do that. What was Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep? It's this amazing volunteer organization of infant bereavement photography. Professional photographers go into hospitals and take beautiful black and white, beautiful images of stillborn or otherwise small children or babies that have passed away, but for other reasons, sometimes with family portraits as keepsakes for the family. I knew what Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep was. I never thought I could do that. I wasn't that brave. Number three on the list was have a past life regression. Well, I knew what that was, actually. I had done a group something or other like that a few years ago. So there was my list. Later, when I woke up, my pain was not nearly as bad as it was when I lay down. As a matter of fact, it was pretty manageable. And the experience that I had was so real. I swear, I almost looked for the sheet of paper in the bed. But of course, it wasn't there. But I started thinking about that list. I remember it right now as clearly today as if it was yesterday. It was handed to me. And I got up out of bed, and even without making coffee, which I guarantee you, and any one of you out there who knows me, is highly unusual, I went straight to my desk and got on the computer and started on my list. The first thing I did was call my doctor, and I knew my doctor wasn't going to be able to see me for 10 days, 2 weeks or so, unless, you know, I was running a fever or something, because he was a very popular doctor. And if it wasn't urgent, you weren't going to get in. But I called the doctor, and I'm ready to make, you know, the appointment for, quote unquote, being tired, even though I wasn't. And the woman answered the phone, and I told her I'd like an appointment with the doctor, and she said, you know, we just had a cancellation for today at 11 o'clock. Would you like that appointment? And I thought, wow, that's a first. Sure, I'll take that. And she asked again, and so what's the problem? I said, well, I seem to be tired. So I hung up the phone and quickly went on to number two. Yes, still, even before coffee, I looked up Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep, and I began to fill out the online form to volunteer. Now, at the bottom of that volunteer application, which was extensive, it said, please know we have so many volunteers and it takes several weeks to get through these applications. And basically, don't call us, we'll call you. So I filled out the application as best as I could and I hit send. Now, at that point, I was really needing some coffee. So I got up and I went to the kitchen and I made coffee before tackling number three on my list. So I had my big mug of coffee, and I like it with cream and sugar. Thank you very much, in case I meet any of you out there. And I got back to my desk and I had a new email in my inbox. And it was from Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep. And I thought, oh, it's an auto response thing or something. But no, it was from the president of the company at the time, or the organization at the time. And it was this really wonderful paragraph. And he said, you know, I never do this. I never do this. But I opened up your email as it came in this morning. And I went through your application. And I looked at your portraits and your photographs. And you're perfect. You're fine. I like your story. Here's your contact information. You're in. You can begin right away. And then he asked me for a favor, which, of course, now by me telling you this, you're going to know that I didn't quite keep this favor. He said, please don't tell anyone I did this. Because people wait a really long time to get vetted for this organization. But I was vetted in the time it took to make coffee. So it started to be a really interesting day right there. So I got online and I started to research past life regression, and I didn't get very far, and I looked up at the clock and, you know, I needed to get a shower because I needed to make my 11 o'clock doctor appointment. So I got a shower, I got in the truck, I went downtown to go see my doctor, and the whole way there, I started to get a little nervous. You know, what was I going to tell my doctor? Well, you know, the light beings, I know now that was my light council. And I know that because since that time, I've taken countless clients to the light council. But at the time, I knew they were made of light and I called them angels. And I thought, well, I'm just going to tell the doctor the truth. And so I did. I was sitting on the exam table on the silly white piece of paper while he was putzing around outside, and he finally came in and he said, hi. And he said, well, you know, we just decided we weren't going to try to do anything for your fibromyalgia anymore. We, you know, you didn't want to take the drugs and it was all I had to give you. And here you're back. And I said, well, I'm back because apparently I'm tired. And of course he's looking at me. And so I just decide to tell him the truth. I said, okay, so I had these angels and they came to me and they told me to tell you that I'm tired. Now, I'm not tired, but that's what they told me to tell you. And I'm doing everything that they told me to do. So that's what I'm telling you. I'm here and I'm telling you I'm tired. And my heart's beaten out of my chest because I'm thinking, what's he going to think? And he looks up at me and he pauses and he says, you know, have we ever checked your blood levels for B12? Vitamin B12? And I said, well, I don't think so. Why? And he said, well, people with chronic fatigue often have low levels of B12. He said, as a coincidence, I had a patient just this morning and he has lots of pain in his body and we tested him and he had very low levels of B12, and you know, it could possibly be that's your issue as well. Most people are just really, really tired. So we tested my levels that day and they were in the toilet. And I immediately got on B12 injections, and it took a while, but I started to feel better. So after that appointment, I come home and I still have number 3 to do on my list. And before I get home, I stop at the mailbox. We, at the time, lived in the kind of neighborhood where the mailboxes are outside of the gate. And I stopped to get the mail, and there was a key, you know, that for the parcel box. I had a parcel. So I opened up the parcel box, and inside was a present. And it was from a friend, and an online friend, someone I'd never met. And I opened up the box right then and there at the gate, and it was a book. And it was one of the Convoluted Universe books written by Dolores Cannon. And on the inside was a note by this friend, and she said, I think you'd be interested in reading about Dolores Cannon. She does past life regressions, and she's also having a class this summer. So I took the book, and I drove the rest of the way home, and I'm standing in the house and I'm thinking, I feel like I'm in a movie. This is like being in a movie. And so I'm running with it at this point. I am following every magical stepping stone that is being laid out in front of me because I can't deny what's happening anymore. So I go into my office and I look at the calendar and I look up Dolores Cannon. And I see that there's a class, and it's in July, and I call the office, and I talk to a lovely lady named Joy. And just as an aside here, Joy, right this moment now, is in a hospital in Arkansas, and she's battling cancer. And I don't think she's doing as well as everyone would like. If you all could send love and prayers to Joy right now, I would appreciate it. And so I talked to Joy about what I need to be able to qualify this for this class. And it sounded like I qualified. I had Reiki training, and that was good enough for them. And so I thought, well, okay, maybe I can go to this class. But summer was busy. We had a graduating senior and another child doing sports, and my elderly mother was living with us. And I just didn't see how it was going to be possible for me to travel and stay 3 days for a class and come back 5 days without me. You know, anyone who's a driving mother in that kind of life and world knows that it's very difficult, maybe impossible. But But I called our daughter into my office. I said, bring your calendar. I think I want to take a trip. And when I said that, she literally burst out laughing. She said, we're scheduled every single weekend this summer. You can't take a trip. But she brings her calendar into my office anyway. And we look at it. And before she even sits down, she says, you know, every single weekend is filled except for one weekend in July. And she points to it on the calendar. And of course, that's the weekend of Dolores's class. Now, this was 2008. So I say, well, mark off the calendar that you can take care of my mom and the horses and other things, driving, etc., the household, and maybe I can take this trip. So the next thing was, well, this class, it cost $500. So $500, well, you know, $500. Could I have taken it out of grocery money or savings? Sure, but I didn't want to do that. Plus, there was going to be gas and hotel. So where was I going to get $500? That was the next question on my mind. And I literally, in my mind, I'll never forget this. I was standing right by the printing machine. And I was thinking, well, okay, so where am I supposed to get $500? And that as soon as my mind had finished forming that question, my little elderly mother toddled into my office holding something in her hand. And in her little German accent, she said, you know, you never take anything from me. I've been living here for so long, and you never take money for food or nothing. Please, please, take this, she says. And she's pushing a check into my hands. And I've always, always said, no, we don't need it. We can afford it. This is fine. I don't need your money. But she's begging me. She's looking at me in my eyes. And she is saying, please, would you take this money? And she hands me a check for, and you guessed it, it was for $500. That sealed the deal. Everything magical was happening. Everything magical was happening. Now, as a kid, I didn't like magicians, and I didn't know why for the longest time. And I know why now, because the stage magician, that fellow who pulls a rabbit out of the hat, they stand up there and it's sort of like, yuck, yuck, yuck. We're going to pretend there's such a thing as magic, but you know there's not such a thing as magic, and I know there's not such a thing as magic, and the world and the teachers and our clergy and everybody says there's no such thing as magic, but we're going to pretend for a little while just for fun, but there's no such a thing as magic, and that's why I don't like magicians, stage magicians. And this is why, because this day magic was real, and the magic kept going. And the magic was really real. And I still don't like stage magicians because I know magic was real. That was the beginning of magic in my life. And it only got better after that. So a few weeks later, it was time to go. And I'm standing in the driveway and I'm throwing a backpack in the back of the pickup truck. And I'm thinking of what it's going to be like to go take a class from Dolores Cannon. The time it's in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And while my backpack is flying through the air, getting ready to land on the back seat, I see it so perfectly clearly. Candace Craw Goldman, is going to be the demonstration subject in Dolores Cannon's past life regression class. It's going to be me. There is no question about it. The magic is not going to stop. It's going to be me. That's why this was all happening. And so I drive 9 hours there, and I begin the class. And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. The class was amazing. There was about, I think, about 30 people there. And I had lots of questions, and a lot of people had a lot of questions. And Dolores Cannon was, well, she was something I'd never seen before. Now, during that, especially the first day or so, I watched as, I'd say, at least two-thirds of the class, during breaks, during times they could be close to Dolores, they would go up to her and they would say, now, Dolores, you know, I'd be more than happy to be your demonstration subject 4-year regression session, and Dolores would put their name down on a piece of paper. So I started thinking I needed to do that too. I needed to put my hat, or excuse me, my name in the hat, right? My little slip of paper in the hat, so that she could possibly choose me as well. And you know what? I didn't. And every time I saw someone else do it, and I didn't go do that myself, put my name in the hat, I thought I was like putting my dukes up and testing God. But I also said, if this is supposed to be, if I am supposed to be demonstration subject, it doesn't matter. If I'm supposed to believe in magic and this path in my life, it doesn't matter if I put my name in the hat or not. She'll still pick me. But as I was having that conversation in my head, of course, my heart's pounding a million miles a minute. And there was a part of me that didn't believe it. And there was a part of me that was thinking I was missing my chance. I believe at the time Dolores had like, I don't know, a 6-month or a year waiting list for a session. And this was an opportunity not only to get a session right away, even though it was abbreviated, but it was, you know, without her fee. And it was part of the class. Everybody, or nearly everybody, wanted to be the demonstration subject, including my roommate. But I didn't ask, and I wasn't going to. And then Saturday night in the class, when it was time to dismiss class and time to announce who was going to be the demonstration subject, Dolores stood up from her chair and her table in the middle of the room, and she started to walk down the aisle, the tables on either side, and she said, "It's time for me to choose the subject." And my heart was racing again. And my roommate especially really wanted to be the demonstration subject. And she knew I didn't ask. And I knew how much she wanted to be. And Dolores calmly and gently walked down the aisle and stood in front of my table and my chair. And she looked at me. And she held up her fingers and she made the quote sign. And she said, "They have told me that it's supposed to be you to be the demonstration subject tomorrow for the class." And at that point, I burst out into tears. I just boo-hooed and I didn't care who heard me. And I began truly to trust in the magic of this world and of what I now know is messages from my higher self. My roommate wasn't all that pleased, I'm sorry to say, but I really couldn't think about her too much without giving her a sweet hug. I had to kind of think about what was in front of me, and I was terrified. I mean, just like everyone else who's never gone through this, I was terrified. What was going to happen? What was it going to feel like? Who was I going to be? Was I going to make a fool of myself? Was I going to be somebody horrible in a past life? I barely slept all night. I got up really early the next day. And I walked laps around the Holiday Inn. I think it was the Holiday Inn. Yeah, right there in Fayetteville, there's an indoor pool there. I walked laps around the pool smelling the chlorine and trying to get the nervous energy out. And then it was time for class and it was time for the session. And so the Holiday Inn staff brought in this little rollaway bed into the ballroom of the classroom there, and it was about a million years old, squeaky, and the mattress was, oh my God, it was awful. And they made up a bed for me there, and I laid on it, and there must have been, I don't know, 7-8 springs at least poking me in my back, but it didn't care. It was like, I'm getting ready to do this. I'm getting ready to have a past life regression with Dolores Cannon. And I did. And it changed everything. It changed absolutely everything in my life and in my world. And I'm actually on this radio program. I plan on playing most of that regression, playing the tape of that and talking about it and the different parts of it and deconstructing it and sharing it with those of you out there who've not ever heard absolute real Dolores Cannon session. So what happened during the session? Well, I went to a life as a caveman. Yes, caveman. And I was a man. And when I looked down at my feet, I had red, hairy feet. And what I found out very quickly was that I was an outcast. And I was an outcast because I wanted to do things differently. I had these ideas that were out of the box of the regular caveman box at the time. And I was trying to suggest different ways to feed ourselves, different ways to take care of ourselves with housing, etc. But the bigger, more in charge, mean leader caveman didn't like me very much. Number one, I was being weird and stupid and had new ideas. And number two, I was red. I wasn't the same color as the rest of the cavemen, who were mostly brown and dark. So they banished me from Caveman Village, and I was living in a small, tiny little cave by myself with no community, away from everyone. And I was lonely, and I was hungry, and I was frightened. And I had big animals hunting me. And I was faced with the decision of being in the cave and being hungry, or facing my fear and facing my hunger and going out and doing something about it. And so that's what I had to do. So that's what I did. And so much of that session explained what was going on in my life and my world and with me physically. And the caveman's life ended with the other caveman pushing me off of a cliff. And as I fell, I remember looking down at the bottom, and Dolores says, "Well, what do you think about that now?" And I said, I'll remember this. I said, "Well, somebody's going to eat today." And I meant the animals out there. And then we spoke to my higher self, and I found out really what I was supposed to do in my life. I was given hints and advice. And it didn't happen right away, but a few short months later, I got better. And my pain left me completely. And I stopped being basically an artist and photographer. And I started doing Dolores Cannon's method of past life regression. And I've been doing that since 2008. And I guess I just want to leave that scene with saying that when I left that class, I said, "Dolores, I'm an artist. I've never done anything like this before. I'm going to have so many questions." And she said, "Oh, just ask the office." But pretty soon I asked her if I couldn't start a group, that we could get together and help each other. And she gave me her blessing. And for a while, we had a very informal group of just practitioners helping other practitioners. But it changed and it became a professional organization. And we've been helping many, many practitioners over many years all around the globe ever since then. And I'm very proud of that. And I still manage Dolores Cannon's professional support forum for practitioners of her method around the planet. And I've learned so much over all these years helping other people and all of their issues and all of their life stories and their problems seem to dovetail always with mine and with others that were in my life. And it's because of that and all of the things I've learned and all of the people that I've met that I really wanted to kind of strike out on my own here with this radio show, New Earth Journey, and talk to not only other practitioners, but other people in the metaphysical world and in the real world too, to bring better life for all of us. So as this show is coming to a close, I'd like to acknowledge the one person who's brought me the greatest spiritual understanding and growth and support in every area of my reality, and that's my life partner, my best friend, my dear husband and soulmate, Tom. He has more compassion, integrity, and strength than anyone I've ever known. And I'm very blessed to share this life adventure with him. Thank you, honey. I love you so much.